Good morning. This podcast is brought to you by HTS. HTS is your local technology expert, serving Delaware for 16 years. HTS specializes in TV installations, home automations, Sonos audio systems, security cameras, and Wi-Fi networks. For all of your home and business tech needs, give them a call, 1-800-690-2029, or visit them, htsav.net. 3, 2, 1. Good morning, Devin Canfield.
Hello.
I nailed it.
There you go.
I got it right. I like that. Like a can on a field.
Yeah.
I can remember.
We had an idea if we ever do some music stuff. We were like, you know what would be a cool like promo video or a cool commercial? Just throw a can on a field with Canfield on the can.
You better patent that. You better lock that down.
Yeah, that's
well, fine. I mean, it works for you because that's your last name. It wouldn't be great for me. Mine's Arquino. I would have to throw. I got nothing.
Yeah, I don't know.
You're lucky.
That's a little tough.
Some of us get special gifts, and that would be a good one.
Canfield. Or it could be like a keynote, but the note, the T is throwing it off.
Oh, I like it. Well, listen. So we talked. You're friends with Carlos. You're a big music fan. Like podcasting. We chatted a little bit about maybe doing some stuff together. I thought it was great. What is your ideas? What you got? What do you think? What's your direction?
Music is definitely the primary, I'm going to call it religion of my life, I would say.
Yeah.
And I know it is for a lot of people. But as a musician, I find myself, even my brother who's huge into music, and most musicians love watching interviews. They like hearing their processes, their stories.
Yeah,
their influence, how they work, why they work, what is driving them to do what they do. And the thing is, it could be any musician, even if they're not playing the big shows yet or have a lot of albums or materials out, they're just as dedicated artists at any level. So,
how old are you?
I'll be 27 in 2 weeks.
27, so I'm 52.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm sort of jealous that, you know, what you guys as younger people have today as far as, like, the ability to, like, you know, like, you know, my son, he loves AJR. He loves 21 Pilots. You know, 21 Pilots is live streaming. They're posting this shit on Instagram. They got all this, a ton of information. Where when I was 27 or 12 or 17, you know, or what we could get was so minimal, you know, like we were talking about Pearl Jam. The first, you know, 10 came out, you know, I had the cover, you know, the CD, and it unfolded into this fucking giant poster, and I read every word, and I tried to figure out, and I tried to understand what Eddie was telling me, but that was it, you know. And you know, we talked about my love for Pearl Jam, your love for Pearl Jam. Part of that, I feel like it was so much work to become a fan, or there was the lack of stuff that I could read or learn about or interviews and stuff like that made me love them more, right? You know, dig deeper. And today, you know, I wonder if a Pearl Jam came out today, would I fall in love with them as much? I love the music, but there was something like that's all you get that made me love them more. So I don't know if I could ever build... I love music, and like you, I it's like my religion, you know. I just did another podcast and played some music in it, and, you know, just analyzing the music, and it means so much. But could another band show up today and make me work as hard as Pearl Jam did, or Metallica, or, you know, whatever I loved? I remember when I was a kid, the Eagles, I forget the album, Hotel California, I think, and, you know, there was this little square on the back, mm-hmm. and it had the picture of the band. I mean, literally, maybe 2 by 2 inches on the back. And I'm like, fuck is this band?
Right.
You know, that was what I got. And so what do you think? How does that, I mean, do you know what I'm talking about? How does that, you know, because I love all that stuff. And there's so much of it.
Well, so a good friend of mine who kind of helps me with the conceptual aspect of the art, right? Because I look at music as an art.
Absolutely.
So it's an interesting time because I think digestion of music is what's most complex right now. I love to think about that there was a time, and I envision now, because my generation's kind of in the middle, which is crazy if you think about it. We were around when cell phones weren't a thing, and we were stupid young.
Right.
And then in our teens, boom, it all happened. Facebook out of the blue. And, it happened while we were young.
iPhone did it.
It's crazy.
Because after that, I had the Nokia.
What is that?
I know, right?
Like flip phone?
Like a dinosaur phone. No, it was just that little, it was a little brick phone.
Okay.
Not a brick, but it was just a little Nokia, and you had to, it was the hottest phone at the time. Everyone had it.
Okay. I bet you if I saw a picture, I'd know what it is.
Absolutely.
But the thing that's interesting to me is my family, big music people. I grew up and there was a mural of Pink Floyd's The Wall on the wall. So what's so prominent to think about is there was a time prior to phones, prior to all this technology stuff, which trust me has a place. That's what's most amazing. It's a tool that could be utilized so well. But there was a time, I'll think of like Dark Side of the Moon.
Ooh, nice.
You didn't have Instagram stories promoting the album. You had imagination.
Yep.
A depth of imagination that is now a creative task about how to work with as a musician. Now, there's still amazing artists that are doing that today in the medium that's presented to itself in the fashion is today. But there was a time you had to, I think about that, you didn't have commercials.
Nope.
You had to wait to see, like, what the fuck is the cover going to be?
Yeah.
Oh, what is this? And you see the cover, and you have the liner notes. You have the lyrics. And you had to sit down.
Were you around when albums were around?
Like LPs?
Yeah, LPs.
Well, see, that's what's funny. I almost feel that CDs were so big when I was younger, early 90s. And then as I feel I even got into my later, 18 and older, you see vinyl start coming back. But a record player was always present in my grandparents' house.
Well, when I was a kid, I remember calling my mom up on the dial phone. Can you stop and pick me up, a record, whether it was an AC/DC album or the new Van Halen or whatever it was. And she would bring it home. And it was the whole thing. You either were like the guy that took the cellophane off or you left it on and just cut it open. Mm-hmm. But, you cut it open and you pull it out and there would be a smell. And you'd get the liner notes and you'd read everything and you put it on and you would start from the beginning and just play through. There was no skipping around.
Well, that's another big thing.
Yeah, I feel like even, there was like some plan to the album. Like, let's start with this song and we'll take him into this song. And maybe they still do that, but we skip around, right? And then we find what we like and then we dump the rest. And it was much more of a commitment. Of course, we recorded onto a cassette or something eventually. But so it was a whole, there was the smell, the touch, the time, you would set with it.
It's sensory, obviously. But imagination, I think, is the word, and music has an imagination still to it. But it's just crazy to think that, because even being a musician now and what you have to do to get started, how to tackle it now, there's no formula. But there's tools, because you have to look and say, well, how do people digest? You have to go and play. That's... Mm-hmm. Nothing will stop that. You can post and post and post, but you got to play. So, but that's how people are doing it. And I just, it's almost like romantic to think, damn, I'm going to go pick up an album, drop it, listen to the one side, finish it, flip it, and listen the whole way through. Like you were saying, that's why you had more of those conceptual albums. Commitment. You had a commitment to everything. Now it's, you got a band. Oh, here's, and I'm guilty. It's what you have to do today. Hey, here's a little clip. And then here's a little thing that goes with this, but it's just amazing. I'm going to say it again, romantic to think, okay, there was a time in music where you had no preconceived notion. You had the preparation to wait and be excited for a full length, the art, I think that's so big, the art itself, the physical, what the cover looked like, all that. Now, the cars don't have CD players. So you don't go and pick up a CD to see what the art, but even for myself, one of the most fun things about music and life in general is that creative energy of making that art, you know. Well, not only a cover, what can this cover represent? What about intertwining these different type of ideas? And now you use more video to do that because you don't have an album to go by. You don't have a CD to go by, so you have to buy a record. But if you're a younger band and people aren't going to buy your record.
Well, so, you know, 1997, I think, No Code, Pearl Jam, No Code came out. All of a sudden it just shows up. You know, you might hear about it in a magazine or something, but it just shows up. You know, this year their new Gigaton album comes out, and it's a completely different Pearl Jam. Not as far as band, but the way they promote it. I mean, first they release a song out of nowhere, and then it's the second song. It's like you want to hear some of the song, you have to take your phone and download this app and then point it at the moon, and then it'll play some of Super Blood Wolf Moon. And so I had never seen that from Pearl Jam before. It used to be just, you know, the album came out and you bought it and you loved it. But now it's like more and more and more things to, I guess, just generate money. It's the new norm. You know, I was thinking about back when, like, Rush 2112 came out, the album. And 2112 was always like, what the fuck does 2112 mean? You know what album I'm talking about?
I do.
What does 2112 mean? Well, it wasn't until I got the CD version of it, then I figured out it was 21 minutes and 12 seconds long, the album.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Put your mind around that one.
Like I was saying, concept. Conceptual.
Well, it was actually the length of the album, but on a CD, it went to 21:11.
Mm.
We lost a second.
Damn.
I know.
Bastards.
But, you know, it's, I guess part of it is just growing up and living. You know, it's what was relevant at our time. You know, my kids, they don't know any of that Hocus Pocus stuff that I grew up with, but they know that they can, you know, their AGR's live streaming, their favorite band, they're live streaming on YouTube, and it's like, I'd love to have that. Didn't. So it just keeps evolving, and, you know, our kids or your kids one day, they'll have a whole new version of it. It keeps growing and changing. So I guess it's how much I want to put a foot in the past and want to put a foot in the present and pay attention to or to the future and pay attention to the present. It's always a challenge.
Well, even like logistically, you can look at it and say, look at it more from a sense of appreciation and kind of accepting, well, this is how things work now. This is how music is released. This is what they do. You could still have a record, but I even think it's like there was not even major TV,
right.
You know? And like I go to Springsteen and Born to Run, for example, reading his book. He was saying it was not normal. He's like, it was me and Clarence Clemons. I'm this short little white kid, and Clarence is like a football player, African-American.
Yeah.
That's not normal. People didn't see promos of that, and they look at that album and they're like, who the fuck are these guys?
Yeah.
Like, what is this? So, but Pearl Jam with, it's Gigaton?
Gigaton, correct? Yeah.
That, the way that they promoted that, to me, it's still artistic. It still takes a lot of creative juices to do something like that. So, while that you can go and buy their record for sure and see all the art and stuff like that, it's just expanded. It's a different type of...
Well, and I didn't even really buy their album. In fact, I'm just signed up with the program that when it came out, it allowed me to have access to it through Spotify or Apple Music. I mean, you don't even buy it anymore. It's just there. You know, there was a time where you just came out with a record. Now they'll release a song and then another song. They kind of get you into it, and then you're kind of like, what the fuck? Is this how the album's going to be? You know, I'm a big Mumford and Sons fan, and two albums ago, they released this Believe song. I was like, oh, my God, I don't like this song. It's just the whole album, you know, and I started creating an opinion, and then, like, another song. And then I'm like, they must just put the worst song they think is out first. And then later I'd find out they love the song. I was just the one that didn't like it. But it's just, it's crazy.
It's
fun, but it's crazy.
It is interesting. It is definitely it's definitely interesting. I think it has to do that our attention spans are too short. No, that's way, way too short.
Or and we just got a lot going on. A ton more information comes at us on a daily basis than used to.
I like the way you put that. There's a lot more information because a band I'd like a lot just released an album.
Who is it?
1975.
The band or the album?
That's actually the band.
1975.
The 1975. They're from across the pond.
Okay.
But a 22-song album. And once again, the way that they did their release is just, it's a kind of like a great modern approach to how to do music. They were releasing a single at a time.
I wonder if we can bring it up. Let's see.
Yeah. But even another great example is John Mayer. So his last...
Love John Mayer.
Yeah, he's the man. He basically released an album in singles and in EPs. So like he would release a single, then like a 4-song EP or something. And then he would release another single and then like a 4-song EP, which ended up making the whole album. So it's just it's almost like the way you're interacting with your listener, it kind of becomes more personal. But I also feel it's definitely it's to keep them engaged so they don't get bored. And that's a weird way to create in a way, but if you can do it out of like a genuine love of creating art as opposed to saying we need to, when you create for the right reason, as opposed to saying I want to get famous so we need to, you know, mind manipulate these people because they need this type of content like this. It's more so, well, yes, that's true, but if you genuinely make that from your love of expressing, you know, expressing. Yeah. If you're expressing just to, for the wrong reason, if it's not like a genuine expression, then you can even take advantage of that too. But I think that's the beauty now when you have these type of artists, Pearl Jam, John Mayer, 1975, where you see this cohesiveness. It's refreshing. It's inspiring.
Let's hear.
Hey, I said to my brother, I'm like, it sounds like Van Halen almost.
He
didn't think so, but it has that kind of
keyboardy kind of sound. You know, the other thing that's different now is that, you know, we based a lot of how music was distributed from the way that it used to be distributed. You know, you made a record and you put it out and then you worked. You worked to promote the record. And now you don't have to, you're not limited to just putting out one album. I mean, a band could literally just put out a song a month, right? Put out a song a month. I mean, if you got to find time to tour, but it almost seems like, you know, it used to be like you get the album, you love it, and then it would kind of fade off, and you would just kind of sit and wait until like Judas Priest dropped their next album. Usually, and those back in those days, it was like they put an album out probably once every couple years. I don't know.
You're right.
That's how I seem to remember it. And then they would tour, and every year Judas Priest would come through Albuquerque, and we'd go see him. And I actually grew up in a great town, Albuquerque. There was a small little tingly coliseum, and every band.
Mexico?
Yep.
Nice.
And like Judas Priest, Ozzy, all my, you know, I was a metalhead. So I loved that. And they all came through Albuquerque. So I was very lucky. Not like here where, you know, we have to drive to Philly or somewhere to.
Yeah. Well, the way you said that, the way it's distributed, so I don't know when it happened, but even Tom DeLonge from Blink-182.
Yeah.
Huge, 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 huge inspiration artistically and musically. But he was even talking about, he took a picture of his studio room and it had like all Blink's like platinum records. And he was like, these mean nothing now. Not that they don't mean nothing, but what he was getting across is that if you would have told me 10 years after these records that people don't buy records anymore. And so it also changes the way that musicians have to think because depending on what level you're at, like let's look at these guys who were saying they're already there, they're established. You can release music a little bit differently, more spur of the moment. You know, John Mayer released just a couple singles. One of his one single is like one of his biggest songs, New Light, just dropped it out of the blue. Put a music video with it. It's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
But the difference you have now is these people aren't getting record revenue. I mean, that was a big thing. a big deal for a lot of musicians. Even right. think about it, 10 to 20 years ago, people were still buying CDs. People were still buying their record. That was money that was still going to the artist. You take that away and everyone goes to streaming. I mean, I forget what the percentage is, and I'm not the one to really know that number off the top of my head. Joe Rogan and the Black Keys did a great podcast about the depth of that. But I mean, even the most insane, like for a musician to make money off of their streaming, you know, they got to be in a pretty good place. And even still, it's not, it's just album sales aren't as big a thing as they were. So you have to look at merch, you have to look at the shows, you need to look at a lot of bands you're seeing now are doing meet and greet experiences.
Yep.
A lot of a way to make that money. So if you have even these smaller bands, you want to go see them, well, okay, tickets $70 or spend $350, you can get a picture, a signed poster, a t-shirt, the album when it comes out, and your ticket. Oh, you want to sit in a one band I love, they're called Chon, small kind of like instrumental band. For even their class of size, they were like, okay, well, $500, you can get a CD, a shirt, chill with us before the show, we'll show you how we write songs. Think about that. That's, they're not doing anything, they're just being themselves. But that, you know, those 10 kids that spend that $500, I mean, that's a good little chunk of change that they probably take an hour out of their day, but they're not, their album sales aren't like they weren't around back then, but the album sale ratio is different just because of the time.
You know, it's clear that the formula's changed. I mean, yeah, it was on record sales. Now, I think they just put out records. I mean, if you don't put out a record, you really have no reason to tour, and I think the touring is where you make the money. It's like, I used to think television was about television shows. Really, television is an advertising show that they stick televisions and the TV shows in between them, because that's where it makes the money. It's the same with the record. You got to put out a record to get the tour. You know, I think back in the day, it was based on selling records, less on touring. I think the record companies got the money off the tour. Now I think that they build the contracts differently so that bands create their money through touring. And it's always changing. I'm sure it was different even before, you know, records. I'm sure there was a whole different thing.
Exactly.
But the you know, what I used to love about music is, you know, the ability to not see my band, you know, to not, you know, that desire, you know, was so much. It's like, you know, having a relationship with a girl that won't leave your side. It's like, you know, but when she's like, and I want you coming over, and you're like, you know, it creates more desire, and that's how it used to be with music. Now, and it's cool. I think, you know, my kids dig it, but for an adult, I'm not as big of a fan as the way it's turned into.
Well, even with the whole COVID.
Well, COVID threw everything for a whirl.
I mean,
and even you were mentioning, you know, Dave Matthews. I love Dave Matthews. But watching Dave Matthews do a live stream on Facebook, I couldn't, you know.
Really?
I just couldn't.
Why is that?
I don't know.
Really?
I don't know. I just couldn't do it.
I dug it, man. I thought it was awesome.
You did?
Oh, well, that's what it's like. Because of this, think about that. One of the benefits we have is we can watch these people play out of their kitchen, their bedroom. You know, there's a girl, Phoebe Bridgers, amazing. Mm-hmm. And she's just sitting in her room, just in her PJs, just playing songs. You know, it's almost like they go back to John Mayer was saying, he's like, for some musicians, we're just going back to how we were. Like, we're just being ourselves again, where it's just us in a bedroom playing. Like, we're reverting back to that natural state, that natural habitat. But yeah, I've been digging the Dave on Facebook and stuff.
One of the things that my favorite thing about Dave was the band.
Right.
You know, early, so, you know, I was around when early Dave came out, you know, and that and the band lineup back then, the sax player, and they didn't have the horn, and they didn't have the other guitar guy, who personally annoys me. I don't really like that guy.
Tim Reynolds.
He's fine. I love the album that him and Dave did solo. The acoustic one was great, but he just gets on my nerves.
So you prefer more acoustically as opposed to being electric guitar in the band?
Yes. But I know they have to make changes, and it's fine. And I like Dave Matthews. I like him up to this point. But what I used to really love was that live, you know, even older Dave, just that live, the interaction between the horns and Dave and the drum player and Dave and the guy that played the violin, you know, it was just a whole thing. That thing is what I fell in love with. But then as Dave has, you know, matured and gotten, as the band changed and different people have gone and come, I still like that. But when I watched them live streaming, I realized that it was not as much about Dave and more about the band and the live stuff. Like, I could sit and watch Eddie Vedder because I'm a huge fan of Eddie Vedder. I love Eddie Vedder. Eddie Vedder could sing Happy Birthday. I'd be like, yeah, I'll buy that one. I'll buy that track.
Send me the alphabet.
Yeah, send me the A-B-B-B, you know, but it's, you know, so it's different. I love Dave Matthews. I just some... You know, we watched a lot of that Black Circle live stream. I really like those guys, but they're very new. You know, I feel like that's them. That's their basement. You know, there's just that new that it's. I'm seeing something that I've never seen before. But now I feel like I'm watching Dave in like his mansion's bathroom.
Yeah,
and so
it almost comes
some of it's been okay. Some of it I didn't stay tuned in for.
Well, that's the beauty of, I think, music in general, is that as human beings, we like to stick with what we like. But it's great when I hear, when there's an artist like Dave in particular, I know there are people, for example, my mom, I don't like seeing him with the band, but she's like, I love seeing him acoustic with Tim Reynolds.
Yeah.
There's me where I'm like, Dave's Dave, I'll listen to whatever. Doesn't matter. But they have that ability. They have the ability to, their palate is versatile and their audience is versatile, like adaptive almost, you know? Yeah. And I think it boils down to like appreciation. You know, it's easy to look at musicians and say, I wish they would do this. I wish they would do that. Like, how do they not do this and that? It's like, man, the dude's just feeling what he's got to do. Like, he needs these people, are human beings.
Yeah.
You know, we look at them and we put them on pedestals. Yeah, rightfully so, because of how we've connected with their passion. But it's also, I think, Dave's just some dad who just now needs to play. And to me, I think that's what's most exciting when I see these musicians or people that you aspire to, you know, inspire you to believe in yourself, right?
Yeah.
And you just still see, like, I guess that's what's cool when I see Dave in his house. It's like, he's just like me. Like, you know, he's a human like I am too, just playing guitar in his house. He just has a big audience. Like,
I agree.
So,
well, but the other thing is that Dave Matthews is Dave Matthews Band. Like, there's a lot to that. It's multifaceted, the performance of a Dave Matthews Band. I felt, you know, I like Dave. Actually, I don't want to come off like I didn't like it. The Dave live streaming didn't hit me as much as like the Black Circle one. I really enjoyed that. There were some different people that did some live streams that I really didn't have any interest in. Some other people live streaming, I thought it was great. So it was just something about that for some reason. You know, the guy from Coldplay, Chris
Martin.
He live streamed from his living room. He's like, all right, everybody, send me some suggestions. Okay, too early for that one. Can't remember that one. Still too early for that one. Okay, I can play that one. You know, Yellow. You know, it's like, it was fun to see. Now, that was entertaining. You know, that to me was really, really funny. But I don't know. Whatever. I think we should I'm ready to be past this, right? Get back to concerts. We got screwed out of a fucking Pearl Jam tour this year, which really annoyed me.
Mm-hmm. But I pray that what it does for these musicians is, it'd be cool to know that they spent some good time in solitude, maybe writing some good stuff, finding some reconnecting with their...
It took 5 years to get this Pearl Jam album out. We're ready. No writing. Let's do some touring.
True, true, true.
But there are other... Yeah, I know what you're saying. Well, and I think there was, you know, AJR. Do you like AJR?
I don't know who that is.
Uh-oh. Did you outgrow AJR?
AJR, yeah. What is that?
Aaron, Justin, I forget. It stands for the three guys that are in the band. You know, my 14-year-old loves AJR. They're actually really good.
I've never heard of
that. But they do like, here, let's play a little AJR for you, son. We'll get you, find your youth. they're doing a lot of, they're actually sitting down, they have a YouTube channel and they live stream and they talk about how they write the song and mm-hmm. create it on the, all the stuff they're doing on the computer. Let me see if I can find you a good song. Have you heard this?
No.
Hello, hello.
It's a good band.
I'm not where I'm supposed to be. I hope that you're missing me, 'cause it makes me feel young. Hello, hello. Last time that I saw your face was recently.
We just went and saw these guys in DC.
How were they?
So good.
Yeah? Nice. Where at?
I don't know now.
Arena or like a
it was a
art they, center type thing.
They have this new arena down on the water.
Okay.
It was great.
Nice.
Awesome band. We also went and saw another band that my kids are into called Sure Sure. You ever heard of them?
No.
Went and saw them up at the Philadelphia Living Arts place. It was good. It's cool to have kids. It's cool to know younger people like yourself, but it's cool to also have like a 14-year-old who's, and it's definitely funny to watch my kids because like my son David, he likes AJR, 21 Pilots, who else? I don't really know what he's liking at this moment. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. Some of the shit I don't even care for. Mm-hmm. But then my younger son Sam, who's 9, he likes Marshmello. He likes dance music, DJ music. He's mm-hmm. into DJs, and I'm like, how did he get to be a... Because I was a metalhead. Yeah. I was into Metallica. That was my path. And he's a DJ guy, and David's into, like, AJR, so...
It's a big thing, man.
Do you have kids?
No, I don't. One day.
Yeah, no.
Not right now, though.
No, they're a blessing, man. They really open your eyes up to a lot of stuff as you move on through life.
I can imagine. And I think that's a big value that needs to get back into this world.
Kids?
That valuing family.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. And musical, honestly, like music can be an integral part in that as well. But I can imagine. I mean, that I was saying earlier, that's the religion of our household. My parents aren't musicians, but my God, if it was drilled into our DNA, I mean, they fucking named me. My name's Devin James. Bruce Springsteen's son's name is Evan James.
Mm.
It's like, you sick bastards.
And I used to drink Evan Williams.
Nice.
Back in the day.
Nice.
Don't do that anymore. Evan Williams, no family. Evan Williams, no family.
That's a good thing to,
remember?
Put that correlation together.
I remember it. I never forget that.
Good.
Well, and I think family's always been around. It's just sometimes I think we spend too much time worrying about other people's family. If we all just kind of worried about our own family and focused on taking care of our family and not looking at others, maybe we'd be in a little bit better place. I have 3 kids and a wife, and I love my family. I could not love my family. I mean, it's just what I do. It's my favorite thing. It's my family. I haven't made an effort or a decision. I haven't said, I'm going to be more family. Shit, you have 3 kids and a wife. You're like, damn it, this is like really cool. Unless... You have 1 foot on out, and what it was like being not with the family. If you have to take care of your family, if you have to be there for your kids, that usually means because you have 1 foot still in what it was like before you had them. And then it becomes a burden or a chore. Then you're like, I gotta. You're like, no, you get to. As soon as you take your foot out of what life was like before them, put both feet into being a family, and then all of a sudden now you get to. Not have to. And then life gets real simple because it's a gift, not something I have to do. And nothing that drives me crazier than people that have to do something. I said, no, fucker, you get to. You're lucky. People forget that.
It's in a, that commitment can, I'm going to say, fester into a major blessing. That's a beautiful, because it's when you foundate that spiritual connection of love, I really think that's where that should be valued. That should be valued highly.
Well, and I don't, you know, spirituality. I was just doing another podcast about, you know, a spiritual awakening. And, you know, I was searching for the spiritual awakening. I'd made this decision. I needed to have this spiritual awakening. And I kind of compared it to getting a Porsche and taking the keys and putting them in my garage and then filling the garage up with boxes and shutting the door. I got a Porsche, but I can't drive it because I don't have the keys. And the keys being my spirituality. And I always thought I didn't have a spiritual, I needed my spirit to be awakened. I didn't have a spirit. I had no relationship like that. And the reality was is that I've always had a spirit. It's just covered up by so much self-centered bullshit being the boxes. And so, you know, as I've gotten older and had to address this stuff, you know, I had to start taking out one box at a time. And the boxes start coming out. Maybe another box goes back in. Maybe this time I get two boxes out. But eventually you start to clear a path and all of a sudden there's the keys. And you're like, shit, I've had a spirit all my life. I'm a spiritual being having a human experience. You know, this is a vehicle. And, you know, I realize I've always had a spirit. I've just filled it with so much self-centered bullshit that I haven't been able to check it. But it's always there. So it's not finding it. It's removing garbage and exposing your spirit.
So I was reading. There's a book that I've been reading now for a couple
years. And that's just my philosophy. I'm not preaching. Sure, absolutely. I ain't preaching, bro.
Hey.
No preaching.
You're in good company. Don't worry. I hear everything you're saying. I like that analogy a lot. I was reading this book, and the line in it said, again, take it with a grain of salt, you know? But to me...
You and me.
Yeah, to me it was interesting because it had said, life is not a journey, but an awakening. And like how you were saying, we're spirits having a human experience. I think Into the Wild.
Yeah.
He spends his whole time just going. Fuck everything. Fuck everyone's views. I'm doing my thing, my way, the highway. And I just thought it was so crazy. That's better too, actually. But I think it's so...
Would you say that's Vedder?
That's Vedder. Like, yeah. He did the soundtrack to that.
Eddie Vedder.
Yeah. He did the whole thing.
No, I like going, oh, that's even Eddie Vedder. Vedder.
I'm thinking, yeah, to tie that in. But at the end, again, what happens? He dies alone in the woods. And the last thing he wrote, happiness is only real when shared. And,
well, you know, and to you know, you talk about alone. I said the only reason I have any problems is because there's other people on the planet. You know, if there was nobody, if it was just me, I would have zero problems. I wouldn't be able to compare out. I wouldn't be able to compare in. I wouldn't be able to base my life on what somebody else has or doesn't have. You know, I get up in the morning and it's all, my whole day is based on other people. You know, it's not like, oh, I think I'm just going to go down to the hair salon. No, I got to go down to the hair salon and cut people's hair. You know, how am I going to dress? Or am I going to be judged? You know, it's all based on other people. If we were just born by ourselves and no one here, it would be very peaceful. I wouldn't have to worry about shit. So dying alone, that's just some weird thing that we've kind of said, oh, that sucks. Or does it? Or is it just amazing? I don't think he wanted to die that way. I mean, I've seen the movie, and it wasn't a pleasant way to die. But, you know, sometimes we, as humans, we just want, you know, acceptance and to be around others and to be, you know, people to, you know, agree or like what we do. And it's a hassle. And to find that peace, to be alone, it's a lot.
Yeah. Well, that's the, like you were saying, it comes, I don't even know how to put it.
Try.
There.
You got this.
Taking that step, like you were saying, right? Remove people from the equation, like you said. Not dying alone or whatever it is. Yes, sharing, like in the movie, happiness only real when shared. take a step out of that and even say to yourself, how you when do we get to that place as individuals to say it's time to go through my shit? Because I genuinely believe we could spend lifetimes and just say, yeah, the fucking Porsche is there, but that's good enough.
I can't drive it.
Or it's just there. You know, you could acknowledge like, hey, yeah, it's there, whatever. But, you know.
I always say, you want to find spirituality, go for a run. You know, I always say, you're not living unless you're suffering. You know, and suffering meaning not getting what you want. And, you know, I like to run. And, you know, I start the run off and I'm fucking, ugh. You know, God damn it. And we go to this, we usually run to a bridge. I always say, if I woke up at that bridge and stood up and looked over, I'd be like, oh, that's pretty. But when I run to it, when I suffer that to get there, and I look over that bridge, I'm like, that's beautiful. And fuck, man, I can do anything I want today. I can be a poet, write a movie. Has anybody got any paper? I think I'm going to write a book right now. All of a sudden, this self-centered wall of fear comes down because I'm suffering. I'm being humiliated almost, you know, I'm humiliating myself. I'm creating that humility. And then all of a sudden I'm like, fuck, I'm really capable of doing anything I want. I might not have enough money or something, but I could try. But before that, I'm like, oh, I can't write a book. I can't do that. I'm not good enough for this. And so, you know, you're not living unless you're suffering. And, you know, I think for another thing is, honestly, for me, it just takes time. It took years. You get to a point, I mean, it's great that you're even addressing it or looking into it. I didn't understand any of that shit. I just did this podcast this morning. I just talked about all this. You know, I was so fascinated by people that could speak in tongues. You know, I'd go to church and be like, and be like, what the fuck? How fucking cool is that? Right. I mean, is that like a real communication with God? And really, it's just this their faith and the spirit coming out of them into whatever sounds they make. They don't, first of all, they think it is communicating with God. And second of all, they don't care what you think because they have faith. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, a guy like me is like, oh shit, what are people going to think of me if I start? How embarrassing would that be, right? That's how I would think. And it's that difference. And I'm like, God, it's not that I want to be able to speak in tongues. It's just that I want to not be able to care what everybody thinks about me having a spiritual awakening or a relationship with a higher power.
Well, faith, right.
Grace.
Faith. Faith is a huge, huge, huge thing in life. Now, I guess to even try to get a little more kind of to take a step back, where was for yourself even? Because for me, I went through something pretty intense around struggling with mental health, mm-hmm. Was hospitalized. One time in particular, because my depression and anxiety was so bad to the point. And again, I was smoking so much weed, you know, and that came to a point when, for me, like if I didn't have faith, family, or music, but faith being the cement, if I didn't have faith in God, the universe, higher power, whatever you want to call it, if I don't have a family support system.
Is it faith or is it surrender? Or is faith another word for surrender?
So it's funny you say that. A song that we're going to be releasing soon, we're releasing 8 songs. My brother and I, one of the songs is called Render Surrender. And the chorus is, why render surrender? White angels of hope, please come in and enter, because I can't figure out why I render surrender. The idea is, like, I was even thinking, like, Bruce Springsteen has a song, No Surrender. Like, I will not give up, right? I'm kind of questioning the same thing, presenting the notion, the question of why not surrender? You know, rendering, you know, you're changing something. Surrender, it's not natural for us as humans. It's natural to spirit, but you need to tune into spirit. That's what spirit is, the surrender, faith, going into that realm. So that song is kind of...
Well, and until you do that, everything you do is something you have to do. And that was kind of my point of about being as far as family. Until you surrender the life you used to live, or the life that as a single guy, you know, chasing, you know, whatever we did, that life, until we surrender and give that up, everything we do after that is something we have to do. Once we give that up and surrender that, then we get to. We're not like a victim of it. You know what I mean? And I mean, how many words can you use for surrender? Faith, all these things that take, you know, a real decision to happen, you know, is kind of like surrendering.
Well, faith to me, like surrender.
Admitted. That's another word. We admitted. Mm-hmm. It's funny that you mentioned that you had a, I mean, when I was a kid and I got sent to this rehab because I was depressed, psych, I was everything. I mean, they could have listed everything for me. Really, I just wanted to smoke weed and stop getting caught at it. You know? Uh-huh. I mean, I'm like in this rehab, and this only reason I'm here, I like smoking pot and my parents don't. That was the battle. Mm-hmm. And that would be the you know, that would be the solution, rehab. And I'd be like, fucking rehabs don't work. Fucking AA don't work. NA don't work. None of that shit works. I didn't want to get sober. I didn't want to quit. It would be years later where I decided I don't want to do this anymore. All of a sudden, that shit works. And now I'm not schizophrenic and depressed and all this shit anymore. Of course you're going to be depressed if fucking someone says you can't smoke any weed. And that's how I was. I'm not speaking for you, but that's how I was. It was depressing. I like smoking weed.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm fucking you up with all these different things.
No, yeah. I'm digesting. I'm listening. It's just, it's very, it's like a frequency, right? Mm-hmm. Think of a radio.
Yeah.
When you're sitting on the radio, you could be on 94.7 and Satan's talking to you. But the whole time, or saying, I don't know, there's bullshit on 94.7, but if you turn the dial and tune into 101.5, you may be hearing the fucking truth of things. And I think you were saying decision, choice, that freedom to choose if you want to commit to that. I mean, to get to a place of, I mean, even surrendering does, I think, over time, and you do get to a point when you could say, I'm aware of where I can proceed to even surrender even more, instead of just being like, nah, fuck it.
Well, an example of surrender, and so suffer, surrender, there's like these words like pre-existing conditions. You're like, surrender, wait, hold on, I gotta back up a second. Surrender. But you know, you take a word like admitted, that's just a different word for surrender. We admitted we were powerless, you know. And this is the first step of a 12-step program, which was huge for me. I mean, it was a big, you know, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol or food or money or women, and our lives had become unmanageable. We admitted. That's like saying, okay, fine. You're right. Right? So that's another word for surrender. Mm-hmm. People are like, don't, I can't, I'm not surrendering shit. Okay, but can you admit it? I can admit it. Okay, we'll use that one then. So there's a lot of words that mean surrender. People don't like, it's like an uncomfortable word. I always said we admitted we were powerless over alcohol because our lives have become unmanageable because of alcohol. So when I quit alcohol,
take that next step almost.
Well, but when I quit alcohol, then all of a sudden I fixed everything, right? And alcohol, food, drugs, sex, women, money is just a mere byproduct of the real problem, which is that we're just self-centered assholes with a deficiency in humility.
But but it still takes that decision, awareness, to even get to that place. I've experienced a lot. I was never into drugs.
What about pot?
Smoked a lot of pot.
Okay, that's drugs, bro.
So
Just be honest.
Yeah, no,
just
trust
be
me.
Honest
I'm with you.
There.
I'm with you. I agree. I think positive.
Well, now it's medication, so exactly. I'm here. I hear you.
But what I mean is outside of pot. Mm-hmm. That was never my thing.
Well, what is drugs? Something that alters how you feel? I mean, my fucking car right there is like a drug.
Music can be a drug.
Absolutely. So I think it's just recognizing what are good and bad for us.
Well, even now, like YouTube can be a drug. The way it, I guess I'm using very basic terms of.
So you weren't using meth,
yeah,
cocaine, well, yeah, and fucking heroin.
No, but for
or
me,
alcohol.
For what was interesting was I was on the prescription drug side of the wheel, yeah. Where I had at one point I had tried 14 different medications in like under 2 years. I had fallen asleep on the wheel on Xanax.
Yeah.
And I wasn't abusing it because, I mean, my panic attacks were so bad. And where I was going, they were like, listen, if you have a fucking panic attack, you got to take this. My problem was I was still smoking a lot of weed.
Yep.
Wasn't really drinking. But, and there's just, even with those types of things I was on, and the taxing toll it takes on people around you still is, it's taxing. And you have the support and people that are there for you. But it's still a lot, and even still, there has to. Personally, there was still a yearning to say, I don't want to rely on. I don't want to take Xanax. I don't want to. And it's just a process. It took years to figure that out.
You know, I'm sober, right?
Yes.
Okay. So I hear you, and I definitely can feel you. That is a it's a challenge, and. Especially when it's kind of, you know, I went through the same thing with pain medication for a back injury. And I didn't know that you and I would be getting into this. And if you weren't expecting it, sorry. And if you don't want to talk about it, that's fine too.
It's all good.
But the fact is that, you know, I was sober, but I was taking back pain medicine because it was prescribed. And I was fucking undermining this foundation of this sober life. But I was doing something that was prescribed. I was in pain. But, you know, I would take a little more than I was supposed to. And I would do a little more often than I was supposed to. And it would later come back and fucking wreck me. And I had to change my sobriety date because of that stuff too. At that point, I decided I really want to be sober. Up until really, I'd been sober since 97. And I really was just still there because I wanted to stop getting caught. You know, I came to this point where I was like, I had stitches. I didn't want to admit it. I didn't want to talk to my friends about it. So I hid in the hospital and I acted like I wanted to be sober. I really wanted to stop getting caught. And 7 years later, I would find myself drinking again because I was really not working on sobriety at all. And finally, after another change of the date, I finally said, I want to be free of this bullshit. I surrender. I'm done. And then that was the beginning of, that was 12 years ago. That was the beginning. But after all that, you know, I could spend too much money and still have that shame and guilt. I can still, you know, do all these other things, but I still have my coin. That was this whole podcast I did this morning. It's like, hey, I got a coin though. I'm sober. But am I doing it rightly? And
so by the coin, what is
that? If you're in a 12-step program, usually you get some token, you know, usually you get a chip for 3 months. No, mm-hmm. I think it's a white chip for 24 hours. A red chip for 3 months, and then I think a blue chip for 6 months, and then a brass coin for a year. And I would have all these coins with numbers on them, you know, take a picture of it, post it on my Instagram, look at me. But am I doing it rightly? You know, I used to say when I first got sober, I'm like, look how fucking great I am. Sober. Really, I was up to normal, so to speak. But I remember taking the shopping cart all the way up to the front of the store because I was sober now. Instead of putting it in the place where you put the cart, I decided I need to take it all the way to the manager because I'm sober. I'm great. But I was trying to see if anybody was noticing. So it's fucking, it's, you know, it's always twisted. Mm-hmm. Twisted and it's crazy. I hope you're doing good.
Yeah, no, I'm...
How's your pot smoking?
Well, that's what I don't smoke.
That's good.
I haven't I went through a process called TMS. It's called transcranial magnetic.
Too much smoking. Too much. You went through the TMS in the beginning.
Yeah. I went from TMS to TMS real fast. So yeah, too much smoke into, it's called transcranial magnetic stimulation.
Ooh.
So I was, it was crazy, man. Like when I think about it now, it's weird because what you have to kind of do, it's like, it's just a process, you know, to figure things out, find the right routine, the right formula for you to live the healthiest life that you feel personally you can.
Did you start doing this, trying to get yourself off of smoking all that weed because you really wanted to, or is it because you were kind of had to?
No, definitely not because I had to. I basically, so I, again, wasn't a big drinker, mm-hmm. never did like hard type of drugs, anything like that. Smoked pot, started smoking weed because I'm like, oh yeah, I'm a musician too. It's cool, whatever. And all my friends did. And then over time, I was just like, nah, this definitely isn't helping me. So what kind of happened was I ended up, my depression was clinically suicidal, unfortunately. Mm. So I was going to make a bad decision. I was in a place so bad, I was going to choose to not be here anymore. And I chose against that, but through whatever, and put myself into a hospital.
What do you think got you there?
To that place?
Yeah.
When I think about it now,
I mean, an honest, hard look at it. Was it just not getting what you wanted?
I think a couple things, just a, not even bad timing, but I had gotten arrested prior to that for smoking. Yeah. So
shame, guilt.
It was funny because it's not like I was in a bad place. I just got caught.
Right.
I just got caught.
People. There they are again.
Yeah.
Showing up.
But hey, you got to do what you got. I learned what I had to learn. So I felt like an asshole about that. I felt like an asshole for smoking weed. I had no idea. The thing is, which is funny, I knew I wanted to cultivate music, create, be in the artistic endeavors. You know, podcasting wasn't even a thing, but I knew, I'm like, fuck, there's a lot of creative energy here that I don't know what the fuck to do. I sure as shit don't know what I should do about college. And this was around that time. Right. I was in community college. I'm like, I have no fucking clue what I want to do. But then it was also like, no, I do know what I want to do. I know exactly what I want to do. So there was kind of a confusion about the fact of, fuck, like I know where music sits within my soul and where how it's trying to manifest out of me. Like the energy is like, there's nothing I can do to stop from playing and writing and why I'm doing this. This, what I'm feeling, I feel other people can connect with as well. But at that time, you know, I mean, I was still only like 20, 21, I'm 27 now, but I was just getting high and I'm just like, I don't know what the fuck I want to do. All these jobs and these opportunities I have, like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do any of this shit. Not because I'm lazy, but just because I started thinking to myself, like, is this going to be my life? Like, am I going to be stuck in here, you know, doing something like this? And life changed and some things happened and took me on a different road where once I decided, like, quite honestly, I was going to kill myself and didn't. I told my parents, I'm like, I need to go to the hospital now. Struggled with anxiety, you know, but prior to that, once I started smoking, it was almost like my mind kind of cracked the shell, but then I like everything kind of cracked as well. I started getting a little bit fucking crazy.
Yeah. Dude, I did the same path.
Yeah.
So I mean, I'm 51 years old. It took me, you know, 40 years to figure out what I wanted to do.
Yeah. So once basically from that moment when all that happened, I said to myself, okay, well, I'm going to try until I can, you know, feel where I want to feel. So that took a couple years, but ended up with still smoking pot, got put on medications, which helped. At one point I was taking and right now I still do take medication. I do mm-hmm. take an anti-anxiety medication. But at my worst, I was taking 4 meds at once, and that was Zoloft, an antidepressant, Lamictal, a mood stabilizer, Buspirone, an anti-anxiety, and Xanax when needed. And when I look back, I was saying, like, yes, that kept me even keel. But now that I'm not taking all of that, like, I wasn't taking the Xanax, just, like, popping them. But I even see that, I'm like, fuck, dude, that shit is fucked up. Like, okay. That, like, it helped me to not lose my fucking mind. But I'm also like, that shit is fucking insane. Like, that stuff will...
You know what I do? And listen, if you have anybody that has a mental condition or, something like that needs to be put on medication, by all means, be on medication. I was diagnosed schizophrenic, depressed, all this shit back in, I don't know, whatever it was, back in 88, 89. I was on medication. I did all that shit. Getting sober, the one thing that I do today is I pray out loud. I practice with my kids too, because this is, for me, all the problems I've ever had are just me not getting my way. Whether it's can't smoke pot, don't make enough money, I want to be like that. That's where like 12-step programs are really great, is like teaching you that kind of stuff. Like, I can be mad, but I need to understand why I'm mad. And it's usually because I'm not good enough. I haven't made enough. It's always this not good enough thing for me. So it's like, I hate Mr. Jones. Why? Prior? I don't know, but I hate him. Now? Oh, well, Mr. Jones makes good money. Mr. Jones has a better car. Mr. Jones has a prettier wife. These are all just examples. Okay, now I know why. At least I understand it. Then I can pray. And I was saying this, in another podcast, and I said it with my kids, because my kids get anxiety. My son Sam gets freaked out. Am I going to have to live at college when I go to college? And I go, dude, you're 8. He's worrying about shit at 8 that he's not going to learn until he's 19. So what we do is we turn it over. I surrender it. I said, dear Lord, I'm turning this over to you. My shoulders aren't big enough. It isn't about the outcome. It's more about the act. Just to say it, my buddy Matt, you would have loved Matt. He used to keep rubber bands on his arm, yellow sticky notes everywhere. You'd lift up a book and there'd be a sticky note. I was like, why? He's like, to remind myself that I need to stay in the present, and when it becomes too big, I need to turn it over. And he would just, but it's having that faith. If I'm having anxiety, for me, not you, I'm definitely not telling you what to do. Stick with your medicine. But for me, I'm like, whew, okay, this is a lot. So I'm just going to say it. Dear Lord, I'm turning this over to you. My shoulders aren't big enough. Dear Lord. And I just repeat it. And it starts cutting that shit in half. And it's like habits. I can get anxiety. I've created habits to give myself anxiety. Like, oh, geez, this isn't going to go. I'm going to get caught. Or I'm going to get a busted. Or, whatever it is. But now I have to kind of unwind these same habits for me. Not, whatever's working for you. But for me, I start making these new habits. What's that yellow sticky mean? So let me pray about it. Let me just turn it over out loud. Am I going to sound like an idiot? Probably, but I'm going to do it anyway. And it's just that self-centered fear that starts grinding me. So it's just acknowledging it. Back to that stupid word, surrender.
Well, as you were saying, I think the thing to have with yourself is patience. It's because, think about it, anyone that's struggling with anything right now, whatever it is, whether you're struggling with addiction, mental health, your
patience and honesty.
Honesty is huge.
We need to be very honest with ourselves, because people don't want to get, I think people like this quarantine. I think people don't want people coming back to this town. I don't think they like the inconvenience of the traffic. That's fine, but be honest about it. It is what it is. I think being honest and being patient, I think that's a great point.
And it goes back to, as you were saying, about the car and the boxes. When we've spent our whole lives as people, whenever it is, I think everything's a quick fix. Everything has to be, people don't want, like, shit happens. You got to deal with it. It's not supposed to be fucking easy or fun. But, like, if you don't deal with shit with a teammate, a partner, a friend, whatever, like, shit isn't just a walk in the park. Mm-mm. So why are we expecting? And that's honestly what I think is the hardest part about surrendering, is because things change. Like, when you surrender, or you start to choose to yourself, look at yourself in the mirror and say, I want to change. I want to be different. I don't want to be like this. I don't want to feel like this. I don't want to treat people like this. I don't, you know, I don't like this. I do want this, something positive, more positive. I don't want to take Xanax and antidepressants, and I don't want to struggle in this relationship. I don't want to, you know, I want to love. I want to curate love, you know? Yeah. You, why do we sit and look and say, well, I'm 20, say, you know, for example, I'm 27 now, and I'm going to choose to start making a difference, so it should be good by next week. You spent 27 years, right? If someone spent the first 22 years, 18 years, whatever it is, years dealing with these sort of patterns that we've built up, or these feelings, these thoughts, whatever it is.
Habits.
We have to also be patient in understanding that this is going to be a process. Mm-hmm. And with a partner, family, friends, whoever it is, that's the beauty of, I think, love. You can say it's commitment, it's a big commitment, you know, to a commitment to yourself, to someone else, but to understand that this is going to be a process. This is not going to be fucking easy. And like, that's where it starts with. Like, it's not going to be something of, here's 90 boxes from the past 20 years that I'm finally just going to start looking at. But you know what? I want to be healthy. I want to go for runs. I want to do a 5K. I want to try to start my own business. I want to try this new opportunity. I don't want to do drugs. I don't want to fucking, you know, get hammered. I don't want to do things I wouldn't do if I wasn't under the influence. I don't want to feel like this. I don't want to wake up and look at things on this side of the equation. So what that comes with is a commitment, a choice more so, of faith and surrendering to something greater as well. But just the fact that it's not simple. Like, it's not a simple thing to then go and say, okay, it's not like I'm going to change and it's going to happen today. Like, it took, you know, a long time before I was able to find the right sort of steps to say, oh, you know, for me, I went vegetarian. I stopped smoking pot. That's the thing. Like, it'd be great to smoke weed. It'd be great to smoke fucking pot, sit down and listen to Dark Side of the Moon. But it's not about the pot. That's the thing. Like, whatever I'm trying to get out of the pot or the weed is not necessary. Well, I did, like, that's just not the case now. Like, those.
You come to a point where you don't need to reach out to different things to try to get something out of it. Because your story reminds a lot of myself. And you just mentioned I used to smoke weed and listen to Dark Side of the Moon. And I
just immediately, like, I'd go right to Any Color You Like. I'd be like, this is fucking genius. These fucked sick fucks. But
yeah, it's there's some peace, you know, for me, you know, I had to just, it falls back to that damn word surrender. You know, I had to just surrender it all. And up until that point, I had to get sober. Till I finally surrendered, I got to get sober. I was a gift and not this curse. And actually, I didn't get sober until I finally wanted to. You know, everything up until that point were people wanting me to get sober. You know, I didn't get sober because, to me, sober is really has nothing to do with smoking pot, has nothing to do with drinking. It's a surrender. It's a decision to be, you know. I love the story, and if you mentioned Joe Rogan had this guy on, and he does this satanic puppet act.
Mm-hmm.
Have you know who I'm talking about? He's a comedian.
I don't.
And he does this devil puppet, and the head of the satanic church for Southern California calls this guy and says, "Listen, my daughter's getting married. I'd like you to come perform your satanic puppet skit at her wedding." This guy's like, "Oh, okay." So he calls Joe Rogan. He's like, "Joe, you know, this guy, I'm going to go do this, my skit, my act at the leader of the satanic church's daughter's wedding." He's like, "I don't know what to expect. Will you go with me?" And Joe Rogan's like, "Hell yeah, I'll go." So they go, and they show up, and it's the most amazing, beautiful fucking wedding ever.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's having a blast, just an amazing time. And Joe Rogan ends up meeting the leader of the satanic church. And he's like, "Yo, man, what the fuck? This is amazing. It's beautiful. You know, I was thinking we're going to have, like, fucking cauldrons and, like, serpents and, you know,
blood ceremonies. Yeah,
and fucking fire and shit. And he goes, oh, no, no, no. He goes, the feeling here at the Satanic Church is we want you to do whatever you want. Whatever makes you happy. You know, if me and you were climbing a mountain, the Satanic Church, you go for the top. Stick your arms in the air and then fucking point at your friend. Look at me, I won. We're in more of a faith, a Christian-based kind of lifestyle. We put our hand out and we say, come on, brother, let me help you up. Let's finish this together. And I was like, fuck, that's been my whole life. What I want. And I'm not satanic, right? I don't believe in, I don't, you know, I grew up with Ozzy and shit. I was like, hey, I ain't satanic.
Yeah.
But then I'm like, well, what the fuck is satanic? You know, is it just a self-centered lifestyle or is it a life of, you know, being there for the next person, a surrendered life? So I didn't just like run out in the street with my arms in the air. I'm like, hallelujah, I got to figure it out now. But it was definitely an eye-opening story for me because I'd really been doing whatever I wanted my whole life at the cost of, if, you know, you talk about taking hostages. I took my parents hostage. Or no, we talked, I was going to say, I never stole from my parents, but you shared a story how, and my buddy Matt goes, yeah, you've been stealing their fucking serenity for years. Their peace of mind. You know, you're out running the streets and they're laying in bed wondering if their kid's coming home. I've been stealing that from them. I never thought about it. I was just doing what I wanted. And so maybe I've been living a little bit of a dark life, you know, that dark side. And it's until I made that choice, I didn't want to do that anymore. I want some peace. I want to fucking finally rest, you know, relax.
Yeah. And you found that side was beautiful as well. Like,
damn right.
See, and that's to me what is inspiring that I, you know, if people hear this, that that's what is amazing. There's so many instances of musicians, actors. Like, I was watching a David Crosby, I think it's Dave Crosby, yeah, from Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, and he was just talking about how the other side, you know, I was using, now I'm not, and it's the fucking best. Russell Brand, another guy, way in the realm of spirituality, but just,
well,
huge.
You have to, there's a, there, and, you know, I get what you're saying, but there's a difference. You just don't, like I said, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol because our lives have become unmanageable because of alcohol. Just because, that's how I read it. It doesn't say that. It says the alcohol at the end is not there. You can't just remove the alcohol and all of a sudden now you're better. Alcohol and drugs are just a byproduct of us being a self-centered asshole with deficiency in humility. It's a lack of humility. So you just can't remember. Not saying that that's what there is, but there is a difference between, because I quit doing all sorts of shit and was not better. I was just as fucked up. Still not getting my way. Still having to do everything. No surrender. No relationship with the higher power. No spiritual awakening. Just me. I was dry. Dry drunk. Dry alcoholic. Dry drug user. And it wasn't until I surrendered that shit. So you want to do a music podcast? Why are you here? Devin, what's up? I invited you here and I didn't know we were going to go deep into this shit.
Essentially my, I have ideas like they're fucking bubbles. Like, yep, they just come up, but
like me.
But as a musician, I just sit back and I say, one of my favorite things is getting to know a musician.
Yeah.
When people can hear like a musician talk, like if someone's idolized, then you hear them speak and they're like, oh, this dude's chill. This girl's chill. There are people too, but how do they work? And it kind of goes back to the spiritual sense of things as well. Like these artists, that medium of music, right? When I think of the word medium, I think the middle ground between, honestly, like the spirit and a human. And that can be tainted sometimes. I think music's made for the wrong reasons and art's made for the wrong reasons sometimes. But there's musicians that I would love to connect with to hear their story. Why are you playing?
So we talked about it. We were doing the Delaware Live Music. I think we're going to try starting another podcast and we're going to let you I don't know what the word is, but I'm not giving it to you. I mean, I want you to do it. I've always said this network is really about people that just want to just have fun. I'm not giving it to you. You asked about it, and I'm like, here it is. I think we're going to give you or let you have a channel and just let you do that. Talk music. Bring musicians in. We did it with Jim Rezac. He still has a channel. I haven't heard much from that, so I'm not sure where we are with that, but I do think there's a need for it. And we're going to talk more about it. I stole all your damn time here. We got past the hour, so
no, it's all good.
I'm excited. I really, you know, I like what you have to say. I'm excited to see what you do with a music podcast for at least our whether it's a local or just music in general. People love it, and so we'll stay tuned. Let's see what do we know what we may call it?
Yeah, I'd catch my riff.
Catch my riff.
Like you catch my riff, man.
I do. You didn't even have to explain it. I got it. All right, Devin. Listen, I appreciate you coming on. I don't know if this was fun or we got too wild in our chat, but I think you're a great guy. I love talking about that stuff. Well, thanks, man. I'll have to have you. I do another podcast called Sorry About Last Night. Maybe that'd be a good place to talk about spirituality and stuff.
Sure thing.
All right, brother.
Thanks, man.
All right, pal. Bye.